From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
We hope that this unreserved public apology will bring you some small comfort.
Grenada's revolutionary leaders say they're sorry. St. Lucia explains why the region needs another airline, and American mainland politics spill into Puerto Rico. I'm Jessica Robertson, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. They were the leaders of the revolution which led to the assassination of Prime Minister Maurice Bishop. Today, they're apologizing to the Grenadian people. As Grenada prepares to observe the 16th anniversary of the October 19th killing, members of the former People's Revolutionary Government have been saying they're sorry from their prisons where they're serving life sentences. Lou Smith reports from St. George's.
In a move not witnessed before in Grenada, condemned criminals appeared on radio and television to make an act of contrition. Bernard Cord, Selwyn Strawn, Leon Cornwall, and Ewart Lane were seen and heard in the first part of a three-hour pre-recorded interview explaining their roles in the October crisis. Bernard Cord read a prepared statement in which he said they fully and unreservedly accept responsibility for the October tragedy and expressed deepest sympathy to the families of those killed.
We fully appreciate that no amount of words from us can heal your pain. Only God's loving embrace can gradually bring you peace. Yet we hope that this unreserved public apology will bring you some small comfort.
But Senator Terence Marischal, a close ally of Maurice Bishop and leader of the party which takes its name after the late Grenadian leader, isn't convinced. He said it is another attempt to justify the erroneous decisions taken by the state, to justify the extreme brutality that they used against the revolution and the Grenadian people. He also took a swipe at newspaper editor Leslie Pear, saying that in collaboration with the government of the day, he was persistently pursuing attempts to free the Grenada 17.
They are trying to fly in the face of justice and to overturn a legitimate decision that was handed down by the courts of this land. Now, as far as we are concerned, and we say it all the time, we have no problems with that group of people being set free. But this must not be a decision to be taken by the Prime Minister and the government of the day, and certainly should not be influenced by Mr. Pear, who has his own agenda. The Grenadian people are the ones that must have the final say in terms of whether they must be set free or not.
During last night's broadcast, Bernard Cord also pleaded with Grenadians to believe him when he said the group knows absolutely nothing about the whereabouts of the remains of those killed on that Bloody Wednesday in October 1983.
We want you to know, we want you all to know, that we did cooperate fully in the effort to locate the remains, including by disclosing to the authorities in 1983 and again in 1996. All the information ever in the possession of members of the Grenada 17 on this matter. We ask you to believe that if we had any knowledge at all as to the present whereabouts of your relatives' remains, we would disclose it to you without a moment's hesitation. However, we simply do not know where their remains are because, to our knowledge, the American military took possession of the bodies of your relatives shortly after the invasion.
Senator Marischal agrees. The Americans have a great deal to say on the whereabouts of those bodies. He said from the evidence his group has uncovered, they know that the bodies were recovered.
We know that the American authorities, they know a lot about what has taken place with the remains. But we believe that some initiative has to be taken at the level of government, the authorities of the day, in the same spirit of national reconciliation, to uncover this mystery. Let us know exactly what has happened to the remains of these people that we have been fighting for the last 16 years to uncover. And then we can really seriously sit down and talk about national reconciliation.
The initial reaction observed by this correspondent waved in favor of people who feel the 17 who've been spared the death penalty should remain behind bars for life. For BBC Caribbean Report, I am Lou Smith in St. George's.
Haiti has announced dates for its postponed local and legislative elections. The polls, originally slated for November, will now take place in March and April. Those elected to the country's lower house will actually be the people expected to pass the final legal documents ratifying Haiti as a full CARICOM member. CARICOM recently sent a mission to Haiti to look at how the regional body can help elections take place. That team was led by St. Vincent Prime Minister James Mitchell, and he's expected to present his findings to his fellow heads of government. St. Vincent's ambassador to Washington, Kingsley Lane, was also on the visiting mission. He says CARICOM will help Haiti prepare for its postponed elections.
CARICOM recognizes Haiti as a sister country, as it does with other Caribbean countries. Haiti has agreed on certain terms and conditions of membership with the rest of CARICOM. A Haitian legislature must be in place to ratify these before Haiti in fact becomes a legal member of CARICOM. We have done our part in CARICOM. It is for the Haitians now to put their legislature in place. I believe that CARICOM is very favorably disposed to giving whatever electoral assistance that we can give from our years of experience in the holding of proper elections. I believe CARICOM will be very favorably disposed to those things.
Ambassador Lane says that the CARICOM mission noted that Haiti was not ready to hold elections in November and needed to postpone.
It's the third time I think it has been postponed. What we saw in Haiti, and which will be dealt with at length by the Prime Minister's report when he speaks to his colleagues, is that it clearly is that the situation in Haiti is not one that is ready right now to have elections like that. You have a registration process, you have a difficulty in getting to people in the rural areas and so forth and so on. That is the reality of the situation.
St. Vincent's ambassador to Washington, Kingsley Lane, on Haiti's elections. There was concern in Georgetown overnight as word spread that some sort of Venezuelan military movement was taking place on the Venezuela-Guyana-Essequibo border. A statement issued this morning by Guyana's foreign minister, Clement Rohi, explained that the Venezuelan National Guard had been engaged in anti-drug trafficking activity. However, prior to the explanation, BBC Caribbean Report understands that many in Georgetown had linked the National Guard activity to last weekend's reiteration of Venezuela's 100-year-old claim to the Essequibo region. The opposition People's National Congress in Guyana said today that they were concerned about the saber-rattling from Venezuela's new government. The Venezuelan authorities have insisted that they will continue to negotiate over the disputed territory through the United Nations. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The region will soon be linked by a new airline. Eastern Caribbean Express is scheduled to come online in February 2000 and will be based in St. Lucia. The private sector venture is spearheaded by Air Jamaica's major shareholder, Gordon Butch Stewart, who is one of a number of hoteliers investing in St. Lucian tourism. Philip Pierre is St. Lucia's Minister of Tourism, Civil Aviation and International Financial Services. I spoke with him earlier and I asked him if the new airline came about because of dissatisfaction with existing airlinks.
I don't think so. I think if you know anything about our region, you know that the demand for airline, for airlift, is still more than the supply. I think what the EC Express will do, it will complement the other regional and local airlines to consolidate existing services and expand into new areas of activity and opportunity.
But the history of new airlines in the Eastern Caribbean has not been a happy one. What's going to make Eastern Caribbean Express any different?
Right. You see, I think the Eastern Caribbean Express comes to the table with a lot more experience than the other airlines in terms of the major shareholders or the major people involved in Eastern Caribbean Airlines have run a successful airline in Jamaica. It is an airline where, when they took it over, it was making losses, and they have learned from their experience, and now they've turned it around to make profits. So I believe that experience that the directors and the owners of the EC Express are bringing to the table will cause the EC Express to be different.
But why now? Surely this is not the best time to launch a new airline. LIAT's struggling, much bigger airlines across the world are struggling. What is St. Lucia going to do to make this venture fare any better?
Well, you see, what's happening in St. Lucia now is that there actually is we are experiencing a surge in investment in tourism. and the other sectors. Right now, as I speak, the Hyatt Hotel, which is an international chain, is building 400 new rooms in the north of the country. The Rosewood, which is a super luxury hotel, is also building 100 new rooms. Sanders are building 50 suites and expanding one of the properties by 100 rooms. Other hotel plans are expanding. So there is a need for elephant in St. Lucia. What the EC Express will do, it will serve as to create connections for the major airlines. We will have to piggyback on what's happening in the other countries in terms of the EC Express being able to collect people when they come to the other island, like Barbados, etc., and serve as a transshipment port. So then the major airlines are going to be going to use the connections from major airlines to bring people into our island. So the EC Express, I think, stands a very good chance of being successful because the demand, as I said, for the airlift in St. Lucia is greater than the supply.
That was St. Lucia's Tourism Minister, Philip Pierre. The wider national political issues in mainland United States appear to be having a spin-off effect in Puerto Rico. It's impacting the working relationship between the island's governor, Pedro Rosello, and his attorney general. Some political observers believe it all boils down to the upcoming presidential elections, with representatives of both the Democratic and Republican parties attempting to gain the advantage. Keystone Graves has been following developments.
The Puerto Rico story hangs on two pegs. At issue are calls by the government and its people for the closure of a U.S. naval base on the island of Vieques, just off the Puerto Rican mainland, and President Clinton's handling of a clemency order for 16 members of the Armed Forces of the National Liberation, a militant group. There was an uproar on the island after a civilian guard was killed after being hit by a stray missile from the base in April. But there was a strange development this week when Puerto Rico's Attorney General, Jose Fuentes, without his government's backing, launched a scathing attack on Mr. Clinton. It came in a column published in the Wall Street Journal. There he faulted the American leader for failing to stop the bombing exercises on Vieques. But that wasn't all. Mr. Fuentes went a step further and publicly criticized the president for granting a pardon to the Puerto Rican nationalist last month. While the offer was welcomed by many people, there were some who accused Mr. Clinton of playing politics because his wife Hillary is seeking to run for the Senate seat for New York State. But on Wednesday, Governor Rosello issued a statement lashing out at his top legal officer for his attack on President Clinton, saying his analysis of the situation was incorrect, unjust, and inappropriate. Bob Friedman is the Washington correspondent for the Puerto Rican Daily, the San Juan Star newspaper. He said it is simply a split along party political lines.
He's a follower of the National Republican Party, and the governor of Puerto Rico is a very strong Democrat and a very strong supporter of President Clinton. By doing this, he's certainly giving an advantage to the Republicans. The biggest opposition to Puerto Rico's stand of trying to get the Navy out of Vieques are the Senate Republicans, the leaders of the Republican Party in the Senate. And this, in a way, this gives them ammunition, just as it gives the Republicans ammunition, those who have opposed the clemency from the president.
Most people see the squabble between the two government officials as politics as usual. According to radio journalist Gary Tuominen in San Juan, they'll want to patch up their differences sooner rather than later.
I think both wanted to make their points known. The governor's chief of staff has insisted that Mr. Fuentes Agostini must show that he backs the governor 100%, not 99.9%, but it is expected to sort of quiet down at some point quickly.
But for now, most Puerto Ricans, especially the ones on Vieques, just want to see the U.S. naval base there closed.
That was Keystone Graves. Before we go, a quick look at today's headlines. Grenada's revolutionary leaders have apologized. The Eastern Caribbean is getting a new airline, and American mainland politics have flowed over into Puerto Rico. But before we go, just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us at 11:05, 11:15, and 12:10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Jessica Robertson saying goodbye from London.